The story of the labor movement needs to be taught in every school in this land. America is a living testimonial to what free men and women, organized in free democratic trade unions, can do to make a better life. We ought to be proud of it. Quotation by Vice President Hubert Humphrey, speaking in 1977. I'm Kevin Cook, and this week in labor history. Wednesday, January 29th, responding to unrest among laborers building the Chesapeake and Ohio Canal, President Andrew Jackson ordered first use of American troops to suppress a labor dispute on this day in 1834. Workers were rebelling because of deadly working conditions and low pay. The use of federal troops set a dangerous precedent that gave business leaders the confidence they could count on the federal government to protect profits, low pay, and deadly working conditions to quash all labor activism. In Germany, 1933, mass demonstrations took place throughout the country as labor unions and workers protested Adolf Hitler's nomination as German Chancellor. Thursday, January 30th, Martin Luther King Jr.'s home was bombed by right-wing terrorists on this day in 1956. He was not at home and was at the pulpit leading a mass meeting during the Montgomery, Alabama bus boycott. By chance, King's wife and 10-week-old baby escaped unharmed. Chicago grave diggers ended a 43-day strike in victory on this day in 1992. Friday, January 31st, over 12,000 pecan shellers in San Antonio, Texas, mostly women, walked off their jobs at 400 factories in a three-month strike against wage cuts on this day in 1938. Strike leader Emma Tenayuka was eventually blacklisted and hounded out of the state. In 2005, 5 months after Hurricane Katrina, the New Orleans School Board fired every union teacher in the district in order to break the union and privatize the public school system. Saturday, February 1st, the Collar Laundry Union formed in Troy, New York on this day in 1864. Led by 23-year-old Kate Mullany, they raised earnings for female laundry workers from $2 to $4 a week. Over 25,000 silk workers went on strike for the 8-hour workday and improved working conditions in Paterson, New Jersey on this day in 1913. 1,800 were arrested and many were beaten over the course of the 6-month walkout. They returned to work on their employer's terms. Sunday, February 2nd. 6 years later, in 1919, 16,000 silk workers went on strike again in Paterson, New Jersey, along with 32,000 in Lawrence, Massachusetts, for a shorter work week with no cuts in pay. The 170-day lockout of 22,000 steel workers by USX Corporation ended on this day in 1987. With a pay cut but greater job security. It was the longest work stoppage in the history of the U.S. steel industry. Monday, February 3rd, 32,000 textile mill workers were involved in the Bread and Roses strike in Lawrence, Massachusetts on this day in 1912. The IWW-led strike began the previous month and continued for over 9 weeks. Strikers were killed by cops and company goons. Many, including Annie Welsenbach and her two teenage sisters, were dragged from their beds and beaten in the middle of the night. Over 200 police protecting corporate profits, deadly working conditions, and low wages attacked thousands of peaceful, unarmed, striking women with their clubs. The U.S. Supreme Court upheld the Wages and Hours Act on this day in 1941. Later known as the Fair Labor Standards Act, it banned child labor and established the 40-hour work week. That was 1941. Tuesday, February 4th, the legendary labor leader Big Bill Haywood was born in Salt Lake City, Utah, on this day in 1869. Haywood was the leader of the Western Federation of Miners in Butte, Montana, and was co-founder of the Industrial Workers of the World. 37,000 maritime workers on the West Coast went on strike for wage increases on this day in 1937. This day in 1954 saw the beginning of a speaking tour by Senator Joseph McCarthy. He was denouncing what he called the Democratic Party's 20 years of treason. McCarthy was the key figure in the hysteria known as the Red Scare that engulfed the U.S. in the 1950s and needlessly destroyed thousands of lives through the use of McCarthyism. By December, the self-serving McCarthy was condemned by the Senate for bringing the Senate into dishonor and disrepute and for obstructing the constitutional processes of the Senate and impairing its dignity. He is largely considered an embarrassment and shame of the country. He died of alcoholism at the age of 48. This Week in Labor History is compiled by Kevin D. Curtis. For KBMF, I'm Kevin Cook. Boo!